You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
Alright, alright. Alright, so here we are. Living it day by day, you are a superstar. And you said what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. My name is David, and today I am joined by my broadcast partner, Alex. How you doing, bud?
I'm outstanding. How are you doing today, David?
I'm doing well. It's good to be recording with you again.
Yeah, it's been a long while, hasn't it?
Great to be recording with you now today. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by wrestling star AJ Kirsch. AJ's got a lot going on. He was recently involved in TNA's Gut Check Challenge. He's getting ready for a big triple threat main event match at Vendetta Pro Wrestling's Summer Sizzle event. Plus, he's lined up an interview with Larry King, so should be fun to have AJ on the show. But first, Alex, let's take a quick spin around the world of professional wrestling. What do you say?
Yeah, let's go ahead and ring the bell.
World Wrestling Entertainment. This is traditionally a tough time for the WWE, a post-WrestleMania lull. I have to admit that I feel it, Alex. Is there anything the WWE can do at this time of year to not suffer a drop in the ratings?
No, but I feel like this year's been particularly bad. I felt like going into Mania this year, they kind of coasted into it and kind of expected the show to be big because of the market, which I think some of the business indicators are going to come back real good, but I don't know what the buy rate's going to come back as. And the show overall kind of feels, I don't know, kind of lazy, I guess. Not really interesting. I don't know how anyone in this world could be interested in Extreme Rules coming up. So, there is nothing they could do. Because WrestleMania is the high point, right? It's the high mark. That's like saying, is there another football game that can get as highly rated as the Super Bowl? Well, no, there's not. But there's things that can mitigate it to where you can keep some people interested the next day, if that makes sense.
Well, how much of it, Alex, is because WrestleMania is so top-heavy with The Rock and Brock Lesnar and Triple H and basically part-time talent. So once WrestleMania is over, they go their own separate ways a lot of times, and what's left doesn't feel as important.
I mean, do you feel that way in this situation, though? Because I certainly don't. I feel like, yes, they're, you know, The Rock isn't there, but everyone else is there. Brock Lesnar and Triple H are having a rematch. A lot of the big-name talent, well, I guess Brock Lesnar and Triple H, and The Rock is gone, like I said. But I'm just not very interested in the main storylines they're pushing, whether it be John Cena and Ryback or the Dolph Ziggler, Alberto Del Rio, Jack Swagger stuff. Is that how you feel, David, that with The Rock being gone, notably, that you're finding yourself less interested?
I do think the main event stars of WrestleMania not really carrying through as regular performers does hurt it. Whether it be The Rock or Brock Lesnar, I mean, I know they filmed that clip where Lesnar, you know, destroyed headquarters or whatever. But I don't get the sense, of course, that these guys are going to be regular participants in the programming, and so I do think that hurts it. I do.
I think that maybe part of it. I mean, I don't think that's the biggest part of it. I mean, you look at the biggest storylines they're pushing. I mean, for example, this Fandango Chris Jericho angle, and I really believe that the company is getting behind Fandango and think he has some kind of semblance of being over, but he doesn't, not in a traditional sense. You know, I think the fans just like to have fun with his theme music. They like to dance to it. It's a little fun thing the fans have adopted, which is very interesting for the very establishment World Wrestling Entertainment fan base. Generally, they don't. That's something you'll find at an independent wrestling show, not necessarily a World Wrestling Entertainment show. But, you know, Fandango isn't really over in a traditional sense. I don't think there's a big clamoring to see his matches. So I think a lot of this lull is created by the ineffectiveness of creative.
If Fandango is an interesting case, because I read that Monday Night Raw crowd after WrestleMania, it's not even that it was about Fandango. It was just about having fun. And may have given WWE a false sense of his popularity. And going forward, it hasn't really kept the momentum going. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. And I think maybe even if it did give a false sense of it, maybe it was something they could capitalize on by, you know, the internet wrestling fans talk about him the next day. And, you know, at independent wrestling shows every day, there's stuff that the fans create, you know, because the fans are usually the hardcore wrestling fans and they do stuff. And I think this was a big example, the Fandango one. Unfortunately, I don't think he's got the talent behind him like Bryan Danielson did last year to be able to capitalize on his big momentum. TNA. Dixie Carter announced Wednesday on Twitter that Impact Wrestling is moving back to its 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time slot on Spike TV. Does it even matter? Will it improve the ratings? David, TNA has seen a decline in the ratings over these past few weeks. Seemingly, on the broad sense, it's losing interest in the product. There's not anything buzzworthy that people are talking about, unlike in WWE, the Fandango thing, which, like I said, is kind of a... I don't think it's as big as... well, the company definitely thinks it is. But seemingly, there's nothing really going on in TNA as they build toward one of their big four pay-per-views, Slammiversary this year. Do you think that moving time slots will help at all, David? Do you think it matters?
I don't think it looks good to continuously move your product around. And there's been so much change. It's almost like they're looking for that magic bullet. Like, oh, we clicked finally. Yes, we got that the right time slot now, or the right number of pay-per-views. And that shows instability, and I feel kind of bad for them. They just can't seem to figure this out. For me, I don't think it's going to make any difference. I think that if your product's good, people will find it. But for me, it just shows a company kind of in the middle of unrest, and that's not good for their long-term health.
Whenever I hear, you know, wrestling fans kind of say, I hear the sentiment sometimes that, you know, what the wrestling business needs is competition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they'll be so much better. Look at the Monday Night Wars, there was competition. David, you know, Impact and Raw, they're getting destroyed by these NBA playoffs. Every fall they get destroyed by the NFL. So, I mean, there is competition out there for them if they're willing to engage it. The thing is, they're not willing to engage it because they have their cut of the market share. So TNA has theirs. And TNA is kind of resigned to the fact that, you know, this is where we're going to be, and I'm sure they would love to expand. But currently, right now, they're part of Spike's plans moving forward. I'm interested, actually, in what this time slot move means for Bellator. Seemingly, they're not going to put Bellator on into the next day, and you know, in midnight, 1 o'clock the next day.
So yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what they do for Bellator. But, I mean, if there's competition professional wrestling wants, it's out there, but they're just seemingly not willing to engage it.
Wild card topic. Alex, you recently attended a live UFC event, and I just wondered if you could tell us more about your experience. I know you're a big UFC fan, and I believe you had a great time at the show.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to write something. I think the time has passed now, but essentially it was the tale of two UFC shows. The UFC show I attended, which is UFC on Fox 7, and the next weekend there was UFC 159, the pay-per-view. And UFC 159 was an okay-looking show on paper. Ended up being just an average show, if not a not very good show. UFC on Fox 7 ended up being one of the, in my opinion, one of the best UFCs ever.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of knockouts. The main event was interesting because it delivered, even though it did deliver. It was a very even fight. Neither guy kind of took the juggler of the other guy, but it was two world-class, very evenly skilled guys going in there and competing. The main event was Ben Henderson defending his title against Gilbert Melendez, and Ben Henderson for the 155-pound champion. Really something to watch, really something special, and it'll be interesting to see his career going forward. Daniel Cormier, the former 2008, I believe, Olympic wrestling captain,
mm-hmm.
made his UFC debut against Frank Mir, former UFC champion, and fought his style of match, kind of conservative, went in there and just held Mir kind of against the cage. The rest of the fights were incredibly entertaining, and like I said, I thought it was one of the best UFC shows ever. Matt Brown fought Jordan Mean also in the UFC on Fox show. Awesome fight. And then making his debut, Josh Thompson. And this guy's had a lot of downs, more so than ups recently, having an ankle injury that seemingly he could never recover from.
Mm-hmm.
Had a couple of lackluster fights where he was talented enough to win. Had another war with Gilbert Melendez, who is a guy he's been married to for years. They've had three fights. And they've all three been incredible. And Josh Thompson made his UFC debut. And a lot of people, I know me going into it, thought that, you know, Josh Thompson should have had this opportunity maybe 5 years ago. Today he really couldn't capitalize on it. He was going against a tough guy, Nate Diaz, who is one of the top guys at 155, and he went out there and crushed Nate Diaz. So seemingly we've seen the resurgence of Josh Thompson. I found out he is training with Victor Conti, or Victor Conti is assisting with his training, David. If you know anything about Victor Conti, he was the Balco guy, Barry Bonds. So.
Right.
But he says he's clean now. He says he doesn't do that kind of stuff. So it'll be interesting going forward. And my experience was excellent at the UFC I attended. And it's all going to July when they present their big UFC Fan Expo weekend, which I'm excited for because...
Where's that going to be held?
It's in Las Vegas, Nevada at the MGM Grand. And this year has special meaning for me because I've decided to compete as part of the UFC Fan Expo. There's a grappling tournament called Grappler's Quest, and I've been persuaded to compete in Grappler's Quest this year. So,
outstanding. Good luck.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, I'm training every day for a couple months now for it. And, I mean, I'm very, very excited. So this weekend, that weekend kind of has extra special meaning for me, I guess. I'm competing myself.
Look forward to hearing how that turns out. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Now, at this time, let's bring on our guest. He's a real up-and-coming star in professional wrestling, A.J. Kirsch. A.J., welcome to OWW Radio. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah. Well, it was nice seeing you recently in Las Vegas at the CAC reunion.
Oh, yeah. Good to see you guys, too. And CAC was only my second year, but it's the I plan on going every single year. It's such an amazing event for people who are a part of the business, fresh in the business, or who have been a part of the business their whole lives.
Yeah, I agree. And I wanted to send a personal congratulations to yourself on your wrestling career. You've had some great success. And were you always a fan of pro wrestling?
I wasn't really a devout fan during its first golden age in the late 80s. I became a fan in the spring of 96, just on the cusp of the Monday Night Wars and the Attitude Era and you know, during that second huge pop in the late 90s. So I was aware of wrestling. I was aware of, you know, guys like Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage when I was a kid. Hard not to be when you're a kid in the 80s. But I really didn't become a hardcore fan until the spring of 96. And what an exciting time to become a fan.
Oh, it was. But you yourself were a two-year varsity wrestler in Mill Valley, California, correct?
That's correct, yeah. And actually, I wouldn't have even joined the wrestling team unless I saw it would put me on the path to becoming a professional wrestler. I think I read in an interview with Mick Foley at one point that if you want to get in the business but you're too young to join a wrestling school, the best thing you can do is join your high school wrestling team. And that's what I did. And I attribute my work ethic to this day to the work ethic that was instilled in me in my high school wrestling team.
I remember, yeah, watching kids in high school wrestling. The practices were brutal. I was going to baseball practice. It was a little bit easier.
Yeah, not quite as physically intense, but it was one of the best decisions I've ever made, both as far as my health goes and just, you know, like I said, getting that work ethic that I still have to this day.
Well, it's one thing to say that this is what you want to do, but how did you then actually start your professional wrestling training?
So I went to school at Chico State, which is about an hour and a half north of Sacramento, and it had been a dream since I was 12. Like, I started watching, like I said, in the spring of 96, and I was just absolutely enthralled with it. And, you know, as I got older, the business was growing with me, so it was really exciting. Just, it wasn't the type of phase, like, you know, you're a kid, you know, Ninja Turtles or Transformers or something that you grow out of, but wrestling is just that one thing that I never grew out of, so... As I was in college, I did a little bit of research and found out there was a wrestling school about an hour away. So as I was earning my degree in school, I was also going to wrestling school and learning how to bump and, you know, just paying my dues and getting in shape and everything that goes with just starting to cut your teeth in the business.
But the training itself, you had, of course, a high school wrestling background. You physically were in condition. But what about the entertainment side of this business, the promos, the character development? Did that come easily to you?
No, it didn't, actually, because I was still a really shy kid in college. I really didn't blossom until probably after I graduated college, to be honest. So getting that showmanship side of it took a little bit longer than I would like to admit, I guess. But I feel like that's the most fun part of wrestling, I feel like, is just getting a chance to go out there. And you can pretty much be whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. You can be a complete character. And if you believe in it, then you, if you believe in it enough, you can get the people to believe in it with you. And that's when it's the most fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's interesting is that recently I was in San Jose for a UFC event, UFC on Fox 7, and in the semi-main event, Daniel Cormier, who was the 2008 Olympic wrestling captain, and he has a similar story as you, as in he started wrestling because he was a giant fan of professional wrestling. So
yeah.
Have you ever had any ambitions to do mixed martial arts?
No, I haven't. You know, I really appreciate the kind of theatrics of professional wrestling. And as much as I admire the athletes of the UFC and the mixed martial arts world, and those guys just, I mean, I'm constantly impressed by everything that they're capable of and their training and their dedication, UFC just never really appealed to me.
Recently, you won the All-Pro Wrestling Tag Team titles with Nate Rules. Now, you said you started watching professional wrestling in 1996, and you grew up in Northern California. So were you aware of the history of All-Pro Wrestling, specifically Mike Modest, Donovan Morgan? I mean, I could name the names all day, the glory area of All-Pro Wrestling.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't aware of it at the time. It wasn't until I was a fan for a couple of years that I started learning about local promotions. You know, I always thought it was just kind of WWF at the time and WCW. And then, of course, later I learned about ECW. And then after I learned about ECW, it was like, oh, there's all these little local promotions that I can go and actually check out on a regular basis. And that was really exciting to me. So I learned of Roland Alexander and All-Pro Wrestling and the boot camp and everything. And it was before I actually left for college that I started researching the All-Pro Wrestling boot camp as a place to train. But commuting from Chico to Hayward would have been about 2.5 hours each way and three times a week with a full load at school and a job and everything. That would have been a little bit too much.
Now, where did you end up training to be a professional wrestler?
I trained at Pro Championship Wrestling, which at the time was located in Yuba City, which is about an hour north of Sacramento. And it was a lot like the All-Pro Wrestling gym, actually. It was just a ring and some weights. And, you know, some a little like mini studio in the corner that was just in this garage in Yuba City. But, you know, I truly enjoyed my training there. As hard as it was, I remember taking my first bump and just thinking like, oh my God, how the hell did these guys do this? And how the hell am I going to do this? But, you know, I kept coming back for whatever reason. I just kept coming back.
You know, what's interesting is that I gained my first exposure of All-Pro Wrestling through the After Bags. I was a big fan of ECW, and RF Video was distributing the tapes. But it was harder to get the taste of All-Pro Wrestling. I saw the King of Indies, and I think that was about it.
Yeah.
East Coast versus the West Coast wrestling scene. What do you feel are the differences? Seemingly, I guess the East Coast guys have an easier time in making a name for themselves. But as a active performer in the scene, what are your thoughts on the Northern California scene versus the East Coast scene?
Well, I think there's a lot of good stuff going on in the Northern California scene. I hear that NorCal guys have a reputation for being a little bit stiffer than SoCal guys or guys on the East Coast. So, and I don't think that's a detriment at all. I think it's just a difference in style. And so it's good to kind of see that come out during the matches, because as a worker, I can kind of like look at it and be like, oh yeah, I can see that there. I can see what they're doing on the East Coast and just see the difference in the way that they work over there versus over here. But I feel like there's a lot more opportunity on the East Coast to kind of be seen, just considering you've got a lot of not necessarily major promotions. I mean, not talking, you know, nothing with like national TV or anything, but you've got promotions that have gotten their names around a lot more than I'd say most on the West Coast. I think most people know about Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, which is based out of LA, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, All Pro Wrestling, of course, received some notoriety after being on Beyond the Mat back in, I think, 99. But beyond that, I think there's a lot more promotions on the East Coast that people on the West Coast might recognize rather than the other way around.
You were on this cast of WWE's Tough Enough,
yep.
April 4th, 2011. Okay, I want to know your perspective of the show all these years after. we had this entire reality show, and at the end of it, nothing mattered because the only person that got an opportunity out of it was Cameron. And the winner didn't get an opportunity. A lot of you guys we never got to see again. So from being on the show, how much did it mean to you in your career to have the opportunity to be on the show?
Oh, to have that opportunity to be on Tough Enough. And I remember thinking just multiple times on the show, like as a fan and both as somebody who, you know, wants to have their future with the WWE, like this, me and the rest of the cast won the life lottery. Like we got to experience moments that, you know, people would kill for. And I just remember thinking out loud several times, like, I can't believe I'm not dreaming right now. Like it was just some absolutely surreal moments. And you know, when I die and my life flashes before my eyes, a lot of the moments from the show are going to pass by in slow motion. Like, those are some truly treasured moments from the show.
You know, what's interesting is that reality television is kind of on the cusp of where professional wrestling kind of was in the 80s, where fans kind of know it's a work, but we don't know the work, right? I guess there's still fans out there today like that professional wrestling. But reality television, someone on the inside, let us know how much of the show, I guess, is kind of directed. I don't want to say scripted, or I want to say directed. How much do the producers kind of tell you what they expect, or they kind of put you in scenarios? Like, how much feedback are you being given as, how much direction, I guess, are you being given on a show like Tough Enough?
Right. We weren't given a great deal of direction at all, to be honest. I mean, the most direction that I think they gave us was when they would do the OTFs, which is short for on the fly. That's like, say, a moment just took place, like some Stone Cold snapped at somebody or something. They would pull one of us aside and do a quick OTF, which is when one of the producers would do an on-the-fly interview to get our reactions. So so you'll see that throughout the show. You'll see something happen. You'll see somebody go like, oh, my God, I can't, what the hell is this dude thinking? Like, you'll see that. And that interview would happen just a couple seconds after the moment happened that the interview is referring to. So really the most direction that we got was they might frame a question so that we get an answer that would help move along the story that's unfolding, if that makes sense. But we wouldn't be told to say something. We wouldn't say, okay, here's what's going to happen, and we want you guys to do this, or we want you guys to react this way. We never knew what superstar was waiting for us. We never knew what the challenge was going to be. We never knew what field trip we were going to go on. And, you know, we never knew. We were just as much in the dark as everybody watching the show for the first time as it was being shot.
So now, as a veteran of a reality television show for a big network, can you watch something like Survivor or like another reality show and kind of see the tricks and the secrets now? Like, are you in on the work?
Well, I don't think so, because if I can still get wrapped up in what's going on and want, you know, just be salivating at the idea of next week's episode, then I can still enjoy it as a fan. And that's still a lot of fun for me. But at the same time, being a part of something like that, I now have a different perspective, but I can still shut that perspective aside and still enjoy it as a fan, which I think is equally as important with professional wrestling. Like, if you've been a part of this business or if you've been a fan for a long time, I think a lot of us are pretty jaded where maybe, you know, we have a hard time enjoying the current product. But when something comes along that has me jumping up and down like a 12-year-old kid, that's when it's truly special.
AJ, when you were there on Tough Enough, a present company excluded, of course, who did you think was the most talented of the other competitors?
To be honest, I thought Luke was going to win the show. Luke was really good in the ring. He was clearly the quote-unquote heel of the show. He had great charisma, and he was just a really easy guy to hate. And I thought, I mean, if you had stuck a gun in my head and asked me to pick Luke Robinson or Andy Levine, I would have been a dead man right now. I would have picked Luke.
By the way, I don't think I know. How did you get chosen to be on Tough Enough?
Well, just like anybody else, I had to send in a video, and, you know, I heard that they were relaunching Tough Enough, and I figured, you know, somebody has to be on the show, and I think it should be me. and I think if you're going for something like that, it, you know, that's the approach you have to take. Like, why not me? And, you know, I mean, if you don't take that first step and make a video or even pursue it at all, then you've already lost. So mm-hmm. I think you kind of have to have that attitude where it's like, you know what, I think it should be me. And I think, why not? Why not me? So I remember dropping off the video and the application and thinking, you know, this is a snowball's chance in hell, but they liked my video. And after a series of lengthy phone interviews, they flew me down to L.A., but they told me to pack for 6 weeks. So they flew 28. They flew 28 people down to L.A., and they ended up flying 14 back from where they came from. The 14 that stayed ended up being the cast of the show.
Now, it's a very competitive environment, obviously. Do you feel like you made friends from it? I mean, do you keep in touch with some of the other competitors?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Eric Watts and I became really good friends. Myself and Martin Casaus, the guy who was broke his ankle and had to remove himself from the competition, he and I became good friends. We're actually going to be in the a triple threat match, the three of us, on June 8th. For Vendetta Pro Wrestling in Atascadero, California.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of funny that, you know, still 2 years later, after the show has been shot and aired and everything, we're still keeping in the same circles, and it'll be the first time I've stepped in the ring with Martin. So I'm really looking forward to that. Eric and I have danced a couple times already.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting you mentioned about the friendships and now the fact that you go to the Cauliflower Alley Club reunions. That's a real reaffirmation, isn't it, of the bonds that people build in this industry?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's something that's so special about Cauliflower Alley that you really don't – I mean, you get bonds from you know, different locker rooms. You see different guys, and, you know, you may see the same faces popping up here and there, but at Cauliflower Alley, you see all these familiar faces and people that truly love the business. And that's something that is so refreshing and so unique about Cauliflower Alley, and one of the reasons why I will make it every year.
Talk about the friends in the business. Did you become friends with the 2010 Miss USA, Rima Fakih? I mean, it was interesting that she was in your cast. How was she perceived by the other competitors?
You know, she was actually really, really cool. I mean, really down to earth. When she was on the show, she really didn't have a diva complex. She really wasn't, you know, stuck up or kind of aloof or anything. Like, she really threw herself into this competition. And if you remember when she was eliminated, it was because her body just wasn't used to the abuse of being in the ring. So she's
yeah.
just, that's why she had to, that's why she was picked to go. So I admire her throwing herself into the competition. And, you know, she was cool. I really don't have anything bad to say about her.
And then, like you said, two of your tough enough competitors are in the Triple Threat main event at Billy Blade's Vendetta Pro Wrestling event Summer Sizzle coming up. You say that's on June 8th, correct?
June 8th, Saturday, June 8th in Atascadero, California.
Do you do a lot of work for Vendetta Pro?
Here and there. You know, I'm ridiculously busy nowadays, and so fitting in additional bookings is exceedingly difficult for me, but Billy and I go back a long way, back to when I first started All Pro Wrestling back in like 2005, I think. So he and I have been around each other for a long, long time, and I'm a fan of what he does with Vendetta Pro Wrestling down in Southern California, Central California, and he is a critical part of putting together Cauliflower Alley and the show that goes on the Monday night. So
mm-hmm.
he's truly one of the hardest working guys I've ever known in this business.
Now, recently you were involved in TNA's Gut Check. Explain exactly what you were involved in and what it meant, because I know
sure.
someone else who was involved in it as well, and I really don't understand, but they got an opportunity on TV. Kind of explain it.
Okay, so Gut Check with Impact Wrestling, a couple of years ago, October of 2011, I participated in a Gut Check seminar with D'Lo Brown when TNA came to Sacramento. And a lot of other NorCal guys were there, a lot of familiar faces. And I thought that was it. I thought it was just going to be, you know, hopefully you get to work in front of D'Lo, you get to learn something, thanks for coming. But I got an email several months ago saying we're going to relaunch the Gut Check competition, and anybody who participated in the seminar is eligible to compete. So I figured, you know, another opportunity. Why not? Let's do it. And so they launched the competition. First time they did it, though, they had unlimited online voting. And I think some of the competitors were pretty well-versed in, or maybe not even well-versed because it's completely foreign to me, but they knew how to set up bots or phantom IP addresses, or I don't even know what it's called, but they were getting thousands upon thousands upon thousands of votes. And it was just, it arose the suspicion that they were cheating to get their vote. So, to their credit, TNA suspended the competition, came up with a voting system so that only one person can vote per bracket. And I was in the third bracket and ended up winning my bracket. So what that means, I have no idea. I'm still waiting for what the next step is in the competition. But TNA has several more brackets to go through before the winners of each bracket are, you know, something's done with them. So I'm waiting just like everybody else, but I'm excited to move on in the competition. I'm eager to see what the next step is.
So what do you have to offer to TNA? Because especially if you go the gut check route, I'm assuming you're kind of familiar with the television product that is the gut check as far as the wrestling match and also the interviews. So if, you know, I'm Danny Davis, asking you, I guess, what you have to offer to TNA Wrestling, what would you say?
You know, to be honest, I haven't thought that far ahead.
AJ, you got to get on that.
No, you know, I think with something like that, I think it's the type of thing where I'm not going to walk in there with anything really in mind. I think I'm just going to go out there and you know, should I get the opportunity to get that microphone on Impact Wrestling, you know, you can bet I'm going to be speaking from the heart. And, you know, I'm not going to go out there and do something like I've sacrificed so much and, you know, this has been my dream. And, I mean, all that's true, but they've heard that story so many times. Like, at this point, I'm sure any veteran who comes across some hopeful in the business is just like, give me something other than that. I've heard that so many times. It doesn't do anything for me anymore. And I think the fans feel the same way. So you can bet whatever it is I'm going to say, it's going to be something that we're going to have people talking.
At this point, what is your goal in professional wrestling?
I've always wanted to sign with the WWE. That's been the place that I grew up wanting to be. That's the place I've always wanted to work toward. And, you know, if you're looking to make a living doing something you love, why not make the best living possible? So from a business standpoint, of course I want to sign with the WWE. But if that doesn't happen, or if that's not an opportunity that, you know, the timing's not right or whatever the reasoning is, then of course I'm going to want to be with the company that's, you know, the second company, and that's Impact Wrestling. And, you know, I'm not going to try to pretend that it's otherwise. Like, WWE is just the place I've always wanted to be.
Now, would you be interested in wrestling overseas? Is that an option, like Japan or Mexico or Europe, for example?
Oh, absolutely. I would jump at the chance for some international experience. Late last summer, actually, I had a tryout with New Japan Pro Wrestling and was able to perform in front of the executives there, and nothing came of it, but I appreciated the opportunity just to get in front of those guys and get feedback. And you know, should the chance come to get out to Europe or Japan or Mexico or anywhere else for that matter. I mean, I feel like pro wrestling is extremely popular worldwide, and to wrestle in front of a crowd that is completely different from the one I'm used to is always a treat.
Did you know the New Japan execs were going to be there?
Yeah, I did. It was billed as a New Japan tryout. Like, I knew they were going to be there, so it was something that I prepared for, and, you know, had all my promo packs and business cards and everything else ready, all of my networking materials, which is something that is absolutely critical.
My short time in wrestling, I did like a year of it. I wrestled a show in San Diego, and at the time the New Japan Dojo was in L.A., and New Japan executive showed up to my second ever professional wrestling match. You want to talk about
it? Oh, no.
Yeah, well, I didn't care. It was my second match, but my trainer, for example, was very upset. Like, oh, my goodness, you know, here I'm wrestling in front of the New Japan execs against one of my students, in the second match.
Yeah.
And it was a terrible match, so.
Oh, God. No pressure,
yeah,
kid.
We found out in the locker room, though, like, hey, the New Japan guys are here. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
What do you think you can still improve on as a worker?
You know, I've always thought that my charisma in the ring was really good. Like, I just feel like I connect with the crowd a lot. But I feel like my style isn't really very specific. Mm-hmm. As in, I'm not a flyer. I'm not definitely not a power guy. I'm not extremely well-versed in technical wrestling. I don't think anybody would define me as a technical wrestler. So I think without having that kind of specific focus in my style might hurt me a little bit. At the same time, though, I feel like I can go in there with just about anybody, whether they're about 150 pounds or, you know, 350 pounds, and have a good match with them. So,
mm-hmm.
But sometimes I feel like it's just lacking where, you know, I'm not, my style just isn't exactly, you can't pinpoint me and say, hey, this guy wrestles this style.
Well, it leads to my follow-on question about who you can study, past or present. You know, someone that you can really learn from by watching their old matches, watching their old interviews. Who's kind of an inspiration to you that you want to learn from?
Shawn Michaels has always been the guy that I've watched ever since I was a kid. He's the guy that made me want to lace up a pair of boots. And, you know, to this day, I think there's never been anybody better in the ring than Shawn Michaels.
Mm-hmm.
But for somebody like me, you know, I'm 6 feet tall and I'm about 200 pounds, so I'm not going to be the biggest guy out there. So I really enjoyed watching guys like Bret Hart, guys like Eddie Guerrero, guys that are not the most physically imposing, but just there's something about them in the ring where you really can't take their eyes off of them. And they make it look so easy. And I think therein lies the art of professional wrestling, is making something that is exceedingly difficult and just taking something that's exceedingly difficult and just making it look like it's completely natural. And I think guys like Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Eddie Guerrero, Kurt Angle, they can do that. And that's just unbelievable to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been a tag team champion. You've actually had a victory over the New Age Outlaws as well in tag team competition. But do you see yourself as a tag team wrestler? Do you like tag team wrestling, or would you rather be more of an individual star?
I really enjoy tag team wrestling. I feel like you got twice the people involved in a match, so you have so many more options with what you can do with, as far as telling a story or double team offense. It's a ton of fun to get in there as a tag team wrestler. And, you know, I honestly don't have a preference. I kind of, for selfish reasons, I'd love to be, you know, if I had it my way, I'd like to be a huge single star. But, you know, as a tag team wrestler, I can see myself having an absolute blast with that as well. So I enjoy myself either way.
I know that you do go to the CAC now, and they have the Casino Royale wrestling show every Monday at the CAC. Isn't that a great way to start the reunions?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have so much fun at those shows, and getting out there in front of that crowd where it's fans and wrestlers and veterans and legends alike, it's a different vibe with that show than there is any other show throughout the year.
Yeah. And I believe you told me that you would like to actually present one of the seminars. They have educational training seminars every year, and that you're in discussion to maybe present one of those. What would the seminar topic for you be?
I want to lead a seminar on social media and how to market yourself, how to network, and how to use social media to your advantage, because social media has been very, very kind to me as far as keeping my name out there, keeping people talking about me, and just chasing down opportunities that you know, you otherwise wouldn't have. I think social media is the reason that I won the third bracket of TNA Gut Check.
Mm-hmm.
Social media is the reason that I'm going to be interviewed by Larry King, and I don't know when that's going to happen, but it's going to happen. I will be a guest on his show, Larry King Now, on Aura TV. And, you know, just it's another example of just like, you know what? I think I should be doing this. And, you know, I'm not going to let anybody tell me otherwise.
AJ, it was interesting during one of the CAC seminars 2 years ago, WWE's Jim Ross discussed the importance of having a plan B in case wrestling doesn't work out. You did receive a BA in Communication Studies from California State University, correct?
Correct.
Would that be your plan B? I mean, I know we don't want to think in those terms, but you know, if something in professional wrestling did not work out, what would you do as your plan B?
To be honest, if my physical contributions to professional wrestling doesn't work out the way I want it to, I'm already looking into ways to contribute in other ways.
Good.
I'm already doing commentary for a lot of local promotions. Some of the commentary is live so that the crowd can hear it. Some of it is just recorded onto matches for when we release them onto DVD or YouTube. In the ring, I feel like, you know, I can't do a Shooting Star Press. I'm not going to do a Canadian Destroyer. But I feel like I can out-talk just about anybody out there. So I'm using that skill to my advantage to extend my longevity in professional wrestling, even though it may not necessarily be in the ring.
Now, I read in an interview that someone else conducted with you that you have a dislike of Jimmy Fallon. So
yeah.
And I share in that dislike of Jimmy Fallon. So can you explain to me your reasons for not liking Jimmy?
I just don't think he's funny. He's never gotten a laugh out of me ever. He always cracked up during sketches on Saturday Night Live. Like the fact that he's a late night talk show host now just staggers my imagination. I just don't think he's funny. That's it. And it's to the point where it's just more annoying than anything else. Whenever I see him, just like that stupid grin in his suit, I'm just kind of like, how do you have a job? I'm amazed.
A lot of people
find him hilarious. So it's just personal preference. Like, I'm probably the most shamelessly outspoken Nickelback fan in the world. Like, people think I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. I freaking love Nickelback. But, you know, the world seems to get off on hating Nickelback. But that's cool. Just because they hate them doesn't mean that I have to like them any less. Just like if I hate Jimmy Fallon doesn't mean anybody who likes them has to like them any less. It's just a matter of personal preference.
So, Jimmy Fallon, entertainer, yourself an entertainer, how does it feel kind of not being at the helm? Because, you know, we asked you earlier about mixed martial arts where in some ways you can dictate your own fate. It's not exactly like that in sports. Unlike some people like to romanticize it, there is some semblance of making a name for yourself in a entertainment sense. But you're strictly an entertainment business. Guys have made it up to World Wrestling Entertainment with no wrestling background. Brock Lesnar, for example, never stepped foot in a professional wrestling ring. There's a few guys like that right now currently in Tampa. So how does it feel being in an entertainment business where you cannot drive it and go your path and end up on a certain road? Or do you feel like if you do step A, step B, step C, step D, you can really set yourself up to go to WWE? Or how do you kind of feel you having control of your career?
I feel like it's up to everyone to kind of decide that for themselves. Like, if you really seek out ways to set yourself apart from everybody else, there are ways to do it. And, you know, I'd like to think that I'm on the right track with that, with doing the kind of social media stuff that I'm doing, with doing this Larry King thing, like doing Gut Check. Like, I'm doing things that just keep me popping up so that, like, I keep hearing about AJ Hirsch and I'm not really hearing about anybody else from Tough Enough, or I'm not really hearing about anybody else from this or that or whatever the case is. Like, I'm just doing things that keep people talking. That's basically what it's about, is keep people talking to the point where I pop up enough times where TNA or WWE are like, you know what, maybe this guy does have something to offer. We should take a closer look at him.
What advice would you give to guys just starting out now in the business?
To get in the gym and stay in the gym. That would be the biggest thing, because if you don't have that look that TNA or WWE or New Japan or whoever else is looking for, then that's immediately going to hurt you, because you only get one chance to make a good first impression.
Yeah.
And a lot of really, really young guys that I talk to nowadays, they're just not built like a pro wrestler. They're not even built like an athlete. So I tell them to learn how to work out and learn to like it, because you should be working out 5-6 days a week if this is something they want to make a serious go at. So, and that's something you can learn, you know, when you're 13, 14, 15 years old. You don't need a wrestling ring to go to the gym. You can go to the gym by the time you're 18, 19, or 20. You know, you can be in incredible shape.
You're a pretty interesting guy. On your business card, it says you're a professional wrestler, a writer, a singer, an actor, and a bouncer. So, you know, a lot of different interests. And what do you consider your real job?
Real job, Jesus.
I guess
I don't
entertainer,
know.
Maybe.
Yeah, entertainer would be I guess the top of the bill. But yeah, I wrote a weekly blog during my time as a bouncer in San Francisco and Sacramento. I do little acting and modeling gigs on the side, one in an effort to make me more attractive to TNA and WWE, and two, they're well-paying gigs. Like, I could get several hundred bucks for just, like, a half day's work.
Sure.
So it's a good little supplemental income. You know, obviously, we've discussed the professional wrestling part, and, you know, I do a little bit of singing on the side as well, but that's more just for fun than anything else.
Well, right now things are going great for you in professional wrestling. It's a tough business. You deserve a lot of credit. Where can people find you on social media?
Oh, boy. Here comes an onslaught of plugs. I guess the top one is going to be Twitter, which is at AJ Kirsch, mm-hmm. AJKIRSCH. Facebook.com/AJ Kirsch. I accept all friend requests. You can like my page at Facebook.com/AJ Kirsch Fan. Oh, Jesus, what else? YouTube.com/IAmAJKirsch. You can subscribe to my channel there. I'm on Tout because, you know, WWE is big into Tout, so now I am too. Tout.com/AJKirsch. And, Jesus, I'm on Instagram. I'm not on Vine yet. People keep talking about Vine, but I haven't made the jump to Vine yet. I'm on my phone doing social media enough as it is. I think any more would be borderlining on an unhealthy addiction.
Well, AJ, we want to thank you very much for joining us here on OWW Radio. Really enjoyed having you on the show, and on behalf of Alex and myself, wish you continued success.
Well, thank you both very much for having me. I had a great time, and I hope it's not the last time chat.
You got it. We'll have you on again soon.
Sounds good, guys. Thank you so much.
All right, Alex, great to have AJ on the program today. I thought your question very interesting about, you know, what his feelings were on MMA, and by the way, has MMA completely overtaken boxing? Did you watch Floyd Mayweather Saturday night?
I did. I don't think it has overtaken boxing. I think it's that boxing has an inability currently to put together big fights. You know, I was born in the 80s. I actually watched the build to Leonard Hagler this past week on YouTube, and what an incredible build. And honestly, it's something that pro wrestling and boxing can't really figure out how to put together right now, and MMA is able to do it every once in a while, and it's special. But, man, that was before my time, but what an incredible build. And I wish that there was that kind of stuff that could get me excited as a fan again.
Yeah, I remember all those great middleweight fights in the 80s. Unbelievable time for boxing. But I thought your question about MMA was interesting, and I like AJ's answer. He likes the entertainment side of professional wrestling, certainly something that drew me in. When I first started to really love this form of entertainment, too. So, anyway, you know, AJ's got a lot going on. We'll have to look for him on Larry King. That's exciting. And, of course, we'll post all of his social media contact information along with this interview. Don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com. to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the OWW Facebook homepage. Until next time, I am David.
And this is Alex.
Thank you again to AJ Kirsch for joining us today on the show. We hope you enjoyed the interview, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.